the lid's off the cookie jar.
Woohoo! The cookie jar is back. Hi, I'm your host, Christine Bruce, broadcasting on Wet'suwet'en territory through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. This week, we've got bats in the cookie jar. This is part one of Bats Are the Bomb. Bats are one of my favorite creatures. Carly Quinn, a bat count coordinator on behalf of BC Bats in the Northern Region, is going to join me today for a bat trivia quiz. So pull out your bat phone and get into the bat zone, because bats are the bomb! All summer, I traveled around Northern BC collecting survey data on behalf of the BC Association of Farmers Markets. That job reinforced for me how interconnected all of life is. It was such a busy time that the cookie jar had to be paused for a bit. But I've learned so many things, and now it's time to sit in front of the wood stove and share some of that. Many of the people I interacted with this summer are as passionate as I am about learning. You'll notice our first three topics are double episodes. I didn't plan it that way, but once we got talking, well, there was a lot to share. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as we did. Watching the documentary The Biggest Little Farm reminded me that diversity is key, and that every life form has a contribution to make. With the notion of diversity in mind, I have a wide range of topics to share with you this winter, but I want to start with bats. As you've probably guessed, one of my goals here is to demonstrate the value of many life forms whose reputation has been besmirched. We need to get back to a place where all life is respected, even in the moments of disharmony and fear, and what looks like failure. Bats keep our insect populations in check. They're not the scary creatures that some of us associate with the spooky side of Halloween. They're gentle and sweet. That's one of the reasons I got training last year as a bat ambassador. And Carly Quinn, our Skeena Region Bat Count Coordinator on behalf of BC Bats, is going to help me convince you of how great they are.
Hey Smithers, this is Carly Quinn. I'm the BC Bat Project Coordinator for the Skeena Region. Little brown myotis, the province's most common bat, can live up to 30 years in the wild, which given their size is very impressive. Learn more about bats at bcbats.ca.
Welcome to the cookie jar. I'm so excited to have you here. Honestly, I should be welcoming you back, but you've never been on the program and I can't believe that.
I know. And we've known each other for a while now.
Well, and partly because we just got really close this summer. It just feels like we've been together for a long, long time.
It's been awesome.
Yeah, it has been awesome.
I feel very connected to you. Kindred spirits.
Shared love of bats.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Them winged, fluffy sky animals.
that actually have a bad reputation and don't deserve it at all.
No, because we need them so much. Yeah. Like, the fact that they have a bad rap is so counterintuitive to what we're trying to do with the world right now, which is save it slowly from, you know, environmental collapse. And we need bats for that.
Like, bats definitely are so good at fixing those things.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. They're a key species that we need.
I think we saw that during COVID, although we weren't aware of it. You know, there were so many things that we can't interfere with while we're all stuck in our houses. And bats is one of them.
Yeah.
So they got to do their thing without anybody annoying them or scaring them. And suddenly things, you know, systems started going back into place. And I'm like, hooray! And then the cars came out again. And I thought, oh, shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. All the wildlife took a sigh of relief for a couple of years there. Yeah.
It was pretty fantastic.
Especially the flying things, I think.
Yeah.
Free skies.
Yeah, free skies, not as much light pollution.
Yeah, yeah.
And not as much air pollution. Mm-hmm. Like, we do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
I love us, but we do a lot of damage.
I don't know if you want to go down that road. I could talk about that forever.
It's like you should get up in the morning and say, do you think you could be a little bit less human today?
Yeah, exactly. Be more like a bat today.
Yeah, totally. What a great thing to aspire to.
Sleep during the day and only come
hang upside
at night.
Down.
Yeah, exactly. Hang by your feet. It's good for you. Take the gravity off of your head.
Okay, so for our listeners' benefit, Carly brings out the five-year-old in me, which is obvious, but it's also really marvelous, and I think we need more Carlys in the world, because Carly and I decided a few weeks ago that we wanted to do a bat trivia episode together, and, like, who who wouldn't want a friend who, you know, plots something like that?
Right back at you.
So our goals are to expose people to these delicate, industrious, and may I say essential little creatures, and maybe to entice more people into assisting with bat counts around the world, like I assist Carly this summer. It was just so much fun. Not only do I want more Carlies, but I also want more bats, if it needs to be said.
Yeah.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight, come out tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Dance by the light of the moon. Walking down the street, down the street. Pretty little girl I chanced to meet under the silvery moon.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight, come out tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Thanks for the light of the moon.
To be my wife, be my wife, be my wife, and I'd be happy all my life. Skip to Maloo, my darling.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight, come out tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Thanks for the light of the moon.
Danced with a gal with a hole in the stocking, and a heel kept a rockin', and a heel kept a rockin', and a buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Dance by the light of the moon.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight, come out tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Dance by the light of the moon.
We need more volunteers like you that are passionate about it and start conversations with people about it, telling people, hey, I love bats is like, yeah, that's like radical in itself, because lots of people love to say they hate bats or they're scared of bats. And so, yeah, having people who are just generally pro-bat is really exciting, but people who are really passionate like you and me, yeah, we definitely need more of those. And I've been so thankful having you come help me do the bat counts this year, because yeah, it was my first year doing them. I took over from Ashley this year. And so like, you know, having you with me, and you've done them before with Ashley, where it was, I was kind of new to it. Yeah, it was really, really great. And like, yeah, just keeping it fun, like going out at night with a friend to count bats. Like, it's kind of a dream job.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, exactly. If I could do this full time, I absolutely would. Please, someone hire me to do bat counts year round.
But I can see how it would be a drain on your energy to have somebody that you have to convince that bats are okay, that they're not going to get in your hair, that they're not going to suck your blood, like all these things that people think about bats that are just not true. Yeah. And you didn't have to convince me.
So it was refreshing. Exactly. Yeah. And you're convincing people when I'm not around, which is really great. You know, like I don't have to sell you to sell other people. You already have that in you, which I really appreciate.
It's pretty fun. I love bats. There's been a couple of times over the last couple of months where we've spontaneously started up a conversation about bats, because that's the thing that we love so much that we share. And it's really funny to feel my energy levels go up all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. You know, I can be having a bad day and then we get talking about bats and it's like, I just feel like somebody filled my balloon with helium.
I feel the same way.
We met over a series of bat counts in northern BC this summer, as we've alluded to. Now, I helped with bat counts last year too, and Carly took over for the previous coordinator, and the rest is history. You've said this already, you've stated this, but for the listeners who don't know what a bat count is, because we keep saying bat count, what is a bat count?
So every year in June, we do the yearly BC bat count, which we essentially go out to known roosts around the area, and I'm the Skeena region person. So I, in the Skeena region, I mostly stick to Smithers because I can't really afford to pay the gas to get everywhere. I would love to get everywhere. But essentially we go to known roosts and set up camp about like a half hour before sunset. You kind of sit perpendicular to the roost so you can see them coming out of the roost if you can, or you sit where you'll be able to see the bat's body up against like a white wall or a light colored wall, or the night sky is essentially what you want. And we just sit there with tally counters and count them as they come out of the roost. And then that data all gets fed back to BC Bats and North American Bats, so that we can, do work towards bat conservation and know what our numbers are and what our species are. We do two counts in June and then hopefully two counts in late July or August when the pups are learning to fly.
They have to do a pretty good drop. I guess there's, they're just pushing one off the side there. Yeah, so that's, now we know exactly where. And if that's the kids' room, they're definitely hearing that.
Okay, a couple of questions to clarify. You said we set up camp half an hour before dusk. Why then?
So because bats usually come out, I think it's, on average, they come out half an hour after dusk, but there is going to be ones that emerge a little sooner than that. So to really cover our base, we want to set up, get comfy, not be like noisy, and try and, make sure that you're kind of out of the way and that they're going to feel, they'll come out no matter what, but you want to make it spacey for them. And so they come out at, half an hour after dusk, and they feed for several hours. So we're counting them as they're emerging for their nighttime feed. We don't count ones that go back into the roost, so we'll miss a fat. But like in that spring count, none of them are going back in. They're all coming out constantly, and like it's quite a flurry, and it's so exciting.
It is. Especially when you get a big roost and you didn't expect a big roost. Yeah. It's like, what are we going to see, 15 here? And you get 350?
Unreal. Thumbs getting sore from hitting the tally. You're like, oh my god, and you get trigger happy too. We're like, that is double count because you're just getting too excited. Having two counters is really good for that, because then maybe you'll have one more than me, or I'll have one more than you, and then we can just average it, because you can get a little thumb happy because they're all coming out at once. So you're trying to count as best as you can. It's getting darker, you're straining your eyes a little more.
But I think people know, but I want to underscore it. Bats are nocturnal. You're not going to see them during the day unless something's wrong.
Correct.
And they do a lot of work on our behalf at night. The number of times I live out at the fairgrounds, and so I have to go out at night, close the gate, check to make sure everybody's gone from the fairgrounds. So I see bats at night. I see them out feeding. And it warms my heart to think that something is out there making sure that all those insects that I'm not very happy about having around are gone the next morning, you know, and the bat's got a full belly. So win-win.
It's a win-win for sure. And like they take care of pests, like lots of pests, like beetles and different moths that cause issues on, like aspen and cottonwood, there's lots of like moth larvae that cause issues. So like, they're definitely helping with our pest control. And then, yeah, there's always mosquitoes who we're all very happy when they're keeping those numbers down.
But, you know, I think about things like the pine beetle. Mm-hmm. The bat population must have been excited that the pine beetle was coming up here,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because a fact I learned recently is that globally, apparently 70% of all flying insects have disappeared over the last 20 years.
That's a bit scary.
It is scary. It's something that we don't talk about very often. And I'd imagine that's bad for bats. And yet, as humans, we're still, like, pro-lowering the insect count. But because we have so many pests, especially, like, moving northward right now with climate change, we have so many new pests every year coming in. So the bats, keeping those in check is really, really important, too, because without them, it would be so much worse. Like, you know, people are really concerned about these, yeah, these tree pests and that are affecting forestry and lumber. The bats keep the new pests arriving at least a little bit in check so that it doesn't take off right away. And then it gives us some time to come up with some other solutions as well. So they're really on our side, really working for us in every way they can.
So there's a lot of industries, I think, like forestry, that should be adopting bats as mascots.
I agree. Yeah.
Like they're one of your best friends out there.
Exactly.
Hi, says the little leather wing bat, I'll tell you the reason that I fly in the night is because the Lord's my heart's delight. Howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, hullo lee de dilly do. I said the woodpecker sitting on a fence, once I courted a handsome wench, she got saucy and from me fled, ever since then my head's been red. Howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, hullo lee de dilly do. I said the bluebird as she flew, if I were a young man I'd have two, one got saucy and wanted to go, I'd have a new string for my bow. Howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, howdy dowdy dillo day, hullo lee de dilly do.
I'm going to intersperse some of my favorite bat trivia. So we've already thrown some trivia out there, but I want to intersperse some of my favorite bat trivia into this conversation. And here's the first one. Did you know that bats cannot stand up or walk? True or false?
True. Bats don't have, because their hands are their wings and their feet are not equipped for walking. They are very uniquely designed for flying because it's how they eat, it's how they do everything. So when they're on the ground, they can do a crawl. They can use the little fingers, their little thumbs that are in their wing to crawl them forward. But there's no standing up and there's definitely no jumping up into flight. They need to drop into flight, which is why they hang upside down, because they do not have the ability to take flight from any position except for dropping into flight.
I think that's fascinating.
It's really cool, and especially when people are like concerned, when they find a bat on the ground and it's not taking flight, they're like, oh, it must be sick, it must be dying. But really, it's just not in a position to fly right now. It needs to be dropping into it. So, you know, allowing that bat to either crawl to the bottom of a tree or the side of a building that it can then climb up is its best way to get it to fly again. So no amount of poking with a broom or your shoe is going to make that thing fly.
You're just going to scare it.
It's got to, exactly. It's just going to exhaust it and stress it out. And so it's got to get to the base of a tree or on the side of a tree. So that is something we like to say, is that if you find yourself in the position that you need to move a bat, use a thick towel or something. You don't want to get bit. So you want to wear either really thick gloves or use a thick towel. Scoop that bat up and put it at the base of a tree, or like put it in a pillowcase and pin that pillowcase to a wall or a tree, and it will crawl up and jump into flight when it's ready. If you want to keep it in a safe place, that's the best. Especially if you have cats or something, the best way to do that is the pillowcase method. Be careful. Do not use bear skin on bats, because although the rabies chances are really low, we just don't want to mess around with that. Yeah.
And it would scare the bat, too.
Exactly. It doesn't want to get handled by you either. A nice cushiony towel is good.
Yeah. Years ago, I worked in a gym, and there were all these big muscly guys at the back, right? And we have this societal assumption that if you're big and muscly, then you're going to protect people, right?
Yeah.
Well, one day a bat got in, and of course, all these guys are all screaming, "There's a bat! There's a bat!" And so I said, "Okay, everybody sit down." And I go to the back, and I turn all the fans off, because we don't want that happening.
No.
And everybody was very obedient. You know, I think, wow, I have so much power today. Turn off the fans, and I grab a towel, and there's the bat flying around, trying desperately to figure out how to get out of here. You know, it doesn't want to be in here. And I threw the towel up and knocked the bat down, and then picked up the towel, went outside, shook out the towel, and the bat flew away very grateful. And then all these big muscly men came to me and shook my hand and thanked me.
You're showing them who's boss.
Well, you know, I think people need to realize that if there's a situation like that happening with any alternate life form, try and think like that life form.
Yeah.
Like, what do they need?
Yeah, they don't want to be in there.
No.
Yeah.
They're not there
to terrorize you.
Yeah. Like, they're not going to get in my hair. That's not their goal in life. And they have no intention of biting me.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, there's only a couple of bats in the world that actually feed on blood, and they're not vampire bats, really. Exactly. You know, thank you, Hollywood, for throwing that one in there. And so, really, assume that this poor little creature is just trying to get out. You need to help it.
Yeah.
To get out.
Exactly. It does not, it wants to be outside, which is why it's flying frantically. Yeah. But they're also really good flyers, so you know, trust in them a little. You don't need to hit the deck. Like they're gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's the calm presence in a storm. Like crazy muscly man running around, you're like, everyone be calm.
Sit down.
I love that.
Now, with that bit of trivia that they can't stand up, add that to the fact that bats don't have hands. So I'm trying to think like a bat here, but I'm having a hard time with it because my physiology is so different from theirs.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine how they catch insects.
Yeah.
Because they can't do it with their hands.
Yeah, it's almost like watching like an osprey pick a fish out of the water. They use their feet. So like as they're flying along, they'll swing their back feet forward and grab onto the moth, and then kind of swing it up into their mouth when it makes sense to do so. But it's a lot like other flying like birds. They use their feet, and it's really, really cool. And like there's some bats are all flight, so they catch all of only flying insects, but there are gleaning bats as well in our valley. So there's ones that will pick up a beetle off a branch and stuff. They're so good that they can, off a rock or off a thing, they can tell that there's an insect on it, and they'll go swoop it off of a surface as well, which is really cool. Most of our bats are catching them in the sky, but some are gleaning them off of surfaces, which is really, really cool.
Both of that sounds very acrobatic. Like those are skills that I wish I watch my grandchildren put their feet in their mouth and think, "You're so flexible." You know?
Yeah.
And so when I hear this, I think, wow, well, the things that bats have naturally that I wish I had.
Yeah, exactly. And it feeds into they're not gonna fly into your head. They're actually expert flyers who are they're pretty good.
Yeah.
they don't need your help.
Yeah, they're probably laughing at us when
they're literally doing sky kung fu every time they go out.
And you know, I had that underscored for me the first year that I did a bat count at the house at Round Lake that had so many bats at it, which we'll get to later. So she had me stand at the door, and there was a white background, and I watched the bats come out, and you know, those bats would come out and then they'd fly directly at me, and I would just stand perfectly still because I know it's funny how emotions take over, and you think, okay, you know what they're going to do, but it doesn't look like they're going to do it, and they fly directly at you, and then they sense you're there and they fly around you.
Yeah.
And virtually all 300 of them did that, you know.
Totally. What a rush.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You know, the first five or six, you're like, oh, God, he's going to hit me. He didn't hit me. He's going to hit. Oh, no, he didn't hit me. Okay, all right, he's not going to hit me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. What a great experience. I'm kind of jealous that you got to see that.
Oh, it was amazing.
That night. Yeah, we had it this year where they just, you can feel the wind.
Yeah.
But they, yeah, they're not going to hit you. Like, and you can just kind of trust in that. And like, you know, maybe in a really tight space, you might want to like get low, but like in the wide open, they are kings of the air. So in the sky and the, yeah.
And to be able to experience it close up firsthand like that gives me a really good respect for bats because yeah. I can see it for myself. Next fun fact, bats are pollinators, true or false?
True. A lot of bats across the world are pollinators because there's a lot of ones that are feeding off of flowers and they drink the nectar. So a lot of fruit bats are really efficient pollinators. I wouldn't say that our bats in northern BC are probably the best pollinators, maybe for things like spruce. I'm not really sure. We have micro bats, so they are just feeding on insects. So there might be some accidental pollination, but South America's and African's bats, very good pollinators and like so crucial, like really, really crucial to, I'm sure there's a really specific fruiting and flowering plants that absolutely need that one species of bats that feeds on them, right? Like there's a lot of symbiotic relationships like that. They're really efficient pollinators in some parts of the world.
Okay, sure. So that's really neat because it puts them squarely in the category, the same category as bees. Mm-hmm. And bees have a really good reputation right now.
Yeah, people are loving bees. Yeah. So it's like, you can love bees that like actually will sting you. then you can love right. bats who are never going to hurt you if yeah. they can help it, right? Like, so yeah, save the bees, save the bats, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and they're facing really similar issues with pesticides and all that, like, is bats are being affected by pesticides as much as bees are. So, yeah.
And their food sources disappearing, as you exactly. said earlier. Yeah, they've yeah. got lots of challenges.
And their habitats, exactly.
Oh, God, yeah, their habitats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Smithers, this is Carly Quinn. I'm the BC Bat Project Coordinator for the Skeena region. Bats use echolocation, emitting high-frequency sound waves and listening to the echoes to navigate and locate prey. It's like they have their own built-in sonar system. Learn more about bats at bcbats.ca.
Love in the dark, a signless kiss, tending to the emptiness. Love is blind as love can be, we are grateful to receive. The morning light, each other's eyes, hollow-hearted each goodbye. Love that brings us to our knees, we are grateful to receive. Love that warms a heart of stone, love that lives on love alone, love in all its ecstasy, we are grateful to receive. Love as strong as love can be, we say thank you, yes and please, we are grateful to receive. On we say thank you, yes and please, we are grateful to receive.
Thrill. Be my one, alternative radio station. It means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
You've got your hand in the cookie jar on CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. And as my little nanny used to say, sit you down and I'll feed you. I'm your host, Christine Bruce. Before the break, Carly Quinn and I were warming ourselves by my wood stove and swapping bat trivia. What a great way to celebrate International Bat Week, October 24th to 31st. Up next, more bat trivia, including what they really eat. Spoiler, they don't want to suck your blood. Where they prefer to live, and how to do a bat count.
What do bats eat? So this is one of those facts that completely dismisses the whole vampire bats notion. Yes, some eat blood, but no vampire bats live in BC, and none of them are going to eat you out of your immortal body, for Christ's sakes. Like, I watch these things develop, and I think, why do you even begin to believe that?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when you think, like, vampire bats aren't really going after humans. I don't know that much about them, but they're mostly like a cattle situation. They'll just hop on the back of a cow and suck some blood for a while and then move on. And we definitely don't have vampire bats here. So you can squash those worries. Our bats eat flying insects, mostly aquatic flying insects, but kind of like a whole smorgasbord of insects. Moss and flies and mosquitoes, and they eat just like thousands of them. It's really quite amazing. I think they can eat up to 1,000 an hour or something. It's a crazy stat. And I mean, like, it's really loose, like, you know, that I think it's a ballpark thing, but because of how much flying takes up energy wise, like, they need to eat so much to accommodate their way of life because flying takes a ton of energy. And as mammals, like, we're endotherms, so we need to regulate our body temperature, which also takes so much energy. So, yeah, the amount of insects they have to eat to keep all the machines running is a ton.
While you're talking, I'm thinking of hummingbirds, which mm-hmm. also need a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I somehow got this ridiculous notion in my head that we should be putting up bat feeders with little mm-hmm. moths flying around inside them.
I think people did try that. They started putting up, like, lights, because you know how there's always just, like, you have a floodlight, it's just, like, covered in moths, right? And so you're like, this must be good for the bats. The bats will come here. When in fact, I think they've proven that bats are pretty, they're moonshine. On full moons, there's less bats than there is on new moons. So it's the same thing with bright lights. Like, I think some bats, like, I think the hoary bat or maybe the eastern red bat might be attracted to lights, but they're much bigger bats.
Also, maybe this is a protection thing.
Yeah.
Right? They just don't want to be visible.
Exactly. Because owls and other hawks will, like, there's owls are night hunters and they'll definitely eat bats. So they don't want to be seen, exactly.
Right.
Nightwing, into the night. There's no real efficient way to feed bats except for letting them, like, you want to maintain their habitats, maintain aquatic habitat so that that puts out lots of insects and lower pesticide use and that kind of thing. So keeping our wetlands is a huge one. We want to keep wetlands.
It always worries me when somebody plows over our wetlands because it's such habitat and it contributes to other creatures.
So many things.
My kids were little, I used to say to them, put your boots on, we're going to go for an adventure. And I don't know, my girlfriends were all taking their kids down to buy more Lego kits or something. And I'm like, over at the wetlands, everybody just sit still and everything's going to come out in a minute. So they learned patience. They learned to be quiet. Mm-hmm. They learned to have expectations that were realistic, you know, wow, look, there's a flock, there's a turtle, you know?
Yeah.
And so really I should have been thinking about it at night too. Look, there's a bat.
Yeah.
How cool is this?
Yeah. It's amazing. the nighttime is a totally different, there are lots of things that come out at night, like salamanders and all that kind of thing, that it's a totally different world. I love it.
Yeah.
And I use that niche. Yeah. And there's way less predators at night for bats, right? Only owls. And other, I guess there's some other night hawk version, but I don't think so. I think owls are probably their number one thing. Most other birds of prey are daytime hunters.
Right.
But yeah, wetlands, everything from like moose, to all the way to bats, right? To every type of amphibian and fish and insect and like
birds.
Owl, dragonfly. Like people love dragonflies.
Dragonflies,
Like, dragonflies are also really good at eating mosquitoes.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep the wetlands. If you can keep a wetland, keep it. And not to mention just like how it helps with droughts and floods and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like they're really important for maintaining the landscape in general.
Yeah. I remember taking the dog for a walk one day down by the wetlands because there were some raspberry bushes down there I wanted to forage. And he scared up a bear that was napping in the wetlands.
Oh.
And the bear kind of looked like, oh, what's this? And the dog's like, I don't know what to do. And I said, we're going home now. Time to finish up.
Napping in the wetlands.
Yeah.
Lots of bear. Yeah, there's lots of good bear food in wetlands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got to be comfortable in the heat of the summer, right?
Totally.
To be able to nap in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's funny. I want to go back to the vampire bats in a minute. Humans use bat saliva for medical purposes. True or false?
True. That is so crazy, isn't it? I want you to explain it to me because I think you know this one. And I would love to hear it. Yeah, you know this one.
Well, I did a little bit of research. I want you to confirm this for me, but vampire bat saliva helps us with blood clotting. I'm not sure how we collect the saliva, but that's another conversation. But it helps with blood clotting. And so we use that for medical purposes because there's a lot of times where we can't get our own blood to clot.
Yeah.
And we need to.
Yeah. I think there's a few things that can help with that. Like, and it's interesting because I think we use leeches and things like that to stop blood clotting.
Yeah, because they put out something that makes your blood
thin.
Thin.
Yeah. So I think that we use that for blood thinning, which is pretty cool.
Okay. Well, see, that was the research I got.
It sounds like something we would do for sure. And yeah, I know we've used leeches in the past for the opposite effect. I would like to look into that further.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually.
It's worth considering because I'd really like to know more about that.
Yeah.
But again, my 5-year-old brain thought, well, like, what do? You get them to spit on something? Like,
how
do you collect bat saliva?
I'm sure it's not a pretty, I'm sure it's like you have to have a bunch of bat. Like, if you had them in like a conservation situation where you were like, you know, raising bats, it would just be kind of like a beneficial thing to do. Like, you know, maybe somewhere in the world they're doing a bat rehab thing where they're releasing bats and during part of that process they collect some saliva. It wouldn't be hard to collect saliva off them, I don't think. You just get them to bite down on something.
Oh, I suppose, Yeah, okay. All right, I'm reassured. 5-year-old.
And then they do that with like snake venom and stuff. You just get them to bite down on like a sponge, and then the sponge just like
of course
absorbs
it. That makes sense. Okay, so at the other other end, what's another word for bat poop, and does it have a useful purpose?
Bat poop is one of the greatest things on the planet.
Unless you're doing a bat count.
You don't want to get poop on you, but it's okay. A little won't get you. But bat guano is what we call it. It is one of the biggest, like, imports and exports of some countries.
Wow.
There's, like really countries with a lot of caves. Like, I lived in Barbados for a bit. I don't know if I told you that. But there was big bat systems there, and they would collect the guano and ship it out because guano is one of the best fertilizers we have that just occurs naturally. It just comes out of bats, and we just collect it, and if you just put some in your garden, it's like, the amount of nitrogen in it is so big because a lot of these insects are also nitrogen sinks, and then bats eat them. It just concentrates all that nitrogen, and then it's so, so good for your garden.
So next year when we do bat counts, I should ask permission to scrape some of that guano off.
That one bat count that you didn't accompany me with in town, she has two bat boxes on the side of her house, and then she has a tray at the bottom. And she just collects it every like week or so and just dumps it into her garden. I was like, brilliant.
Yeah.
And when people are doing something like an exclusion, they want bats out. I'm like, you're going to be tempted to throw all that guano away. But FYI, one of the best things on the planet for your garden. So grab it and yeah, put it in a bin and just use it as fertilizer.
Cool.
It's yeah. It's expensive per pound too. I don't know what the price is, but if you wanted to buy back guano, it's pretty pricey. So it's a gold mine.
You know, that'd be a good business to get into. Right?
Start. I'll help you with your bats if you pay me in bat poo. And don't tell them why.
One of the few people on the planet that I would expect to hear that of. Please pay me in bat poo. Okay, let's get on to the Smithers area counts. I want to talk about the first count we did together. An older home near one of the lakes where the wildlife at dusk was pretty astonishing. Oh, you gosh. Remember that? Gorgeous. The loons, and we saw eagles out, and there was all sorts of activity at dusk.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And there was even an osprey. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
There was even an osprey.
Beautiful night.
Yeah. And the year before, we counted over 400 bats in the house, which is great for the bats, but not so wonderful if you're the human inhabitants.
Yeah. with those older houses, they can be a little more leaky than today's houses. So with 400 bats living in the siding and in the attic, this homeowner was like, okay, they have a young child. We wanted to help them get their bats moving. So for exclusions, when someone absolutely needs to get bats out, because our first hope is that we can learn to live with the bats. We want them to stay if possible, because it's not a guarantee that they're going to find another great place as great as that attic. So our first step is to always see if there's an option to keep the bats there, living with the humans in like a cohabitation issue. But in this scenario, it did make sense to try and exclude them. So bats are protected under the BC Wildlife Act. So you cannot mess with the bats during the maternity phases. So when they're active, essentially, and especially up here in the north, we have mostly migratory bats, and they won't be overwintering in anyone's attics. They need really specific parameters for hibernation. They need nearly 100% humidity to hibernate.
Wow.
Which usually means deep caves, deep old mines. Mine sites can be okay for hibernation. But yeah, they need really deep, wet caves, essentially. So a lot of them will migrate south and find a hibernation site down there. So during the hibernation period is the best time for exclusion. You essentially block off any entrances while the bats are gone. So after they've migrated, after they've left the house and there's no signs of any bats, then you can start blocking off spots. This particular house has so many entrances. Like there's several entrances. It's over 100 years old, this house, I think, right? It's like one of the original farmhouses.
And bats can use a really small space to
get in. Exactly. They need I think it's like 4 centimeters wide is all it has to be, and they're in there. And yeah, there's no guarantee of making them use a bat house. You want to put a bat house up. So this family did do everything right. They put up, I think we counted like 8 bat boxes or something. Yeah. They put up on that one barn.
On the southern exposure.
Yes, yeah, south-facing barn. And the bats just still aren't using them. And there's different reasons that can be. But you can't tell them what to do at the end of the day. They're going to do what they want to do. But yeah, this family, we ended up counting, how many did we count? 70, I think?
73 I've got here.
Yeah, so bats.
That's a good exclusion, right?
Huge. Like, I think the year, but you said you did 400 last year, and I think the year before that was like almost like 700. So it's gone down to 10%, and we were only seeing them come out of one spot.
Yeah.
So we did help that family and like told them, you know, these are where we're seeing them come out of. Hopefully they're going to have someone come and help them clean the guano out. Unfortunately in the north, we're short on services in general. So you have to call someone like Orkin or DKI, I think, is an abatement company, and I think they will also do guano removals. And so hopefully they'll have someone like that come in and clean out the guano for them, and then they can seal off the attic. Because, yeah, in those older homes, there's no guarantee that you're actually sealed off from all the guano. And guano, if it sits for a long period of time and you're exposed to the air, it can have respiratory effects on you. And I don't think we know that much about it, just that it can affect your lungs. So you want to make sure that you're sealed off from
right.
where the bats are living. And in older homes, it's just nearly impossible to do that because there's too many crooks and crannies. Nooks and crannies.
Crooks.
Crooks. No crooks, hopefully.
No crooks. Bats are not crooked.
Hey, Smithers, this is Carly Quinn. I'm the BC Bat Project Coordinator for the Skeena region. As Halloween approaches, images of scary bats become commonplace. This is the perfect time of year to counter bat myths and do something to help bats by taking part in International Bat Week, October 24th to 31st.
I want to talk about where bats live. We've alluded to it, and I think there's a lot of assumptions that a bat's automatically going to go into your attic, mm-hmm. right? Because that's where we see them. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of places that bats live that we just aren't aware of at all. And bats, I mean, out at the fairgrounds, they're not in my attic.
Yeah.
I see lots of bats. So where are they? Where are they living?
So our bats, there's some that are way more adapted to human structures. So they are using attics, they're using barns, they're using bridges, old mines and caves. So there are lots of anthropogenic structures that they use. But we also have a lot of forest roosting bats who choose to roost in the forest. They'll roost along the forest line at a field if they can, because they want less busy sky space. So a nice hollowed out tree on the edge of a farm or edge of a meadow is like prime real estate for some of these bats, because they can have a maternity colony where they all roost, all the females roost together, and they stay warm, and they're inside that tree. So it can be a crack in the tree, it can be a topped tree, it can be a hollowed out tree from like woodpecker holes. They'll find lots of ways, and even, you know, like things like cottonwood where, you know, the bark separates from the core, right. and they get in behind that, and they can stay quite warm in there. So like these big old trees are really important to bats. And the more we harvest big forests, the less bats we're going to have. So doing preliminary wildlife surveys and looking for trees that could be suitable for bats is something I've done in the past as a biologist, is like gone, there's a good wildlife tree. And I say wildlife because sometimes it can be good for bats, it can be good for martens, it can be good for different nesting owls. And we want to keep those. We don't want to chop those down if we can help it. So, yeah, they love trees. There's lots of forest bats, which, yeah, I don't think people, you're right. I think people think that they're just going to be in your attic automatically. But we need to maintain their habitats in the wild as well. And, yeah, support them better.
Yeah. I think one of the things that people, you know, you want to go out, as I said earlier about my grandchildren, my children, you go out for an adventure. You want to do that, go into a forested area, and start looking at trees as habitat. We mm-hmm. forget that that's one of the primary functions of a tree
yep.
is habitat for other creatures.
Exactly.
And there are plenty of things that if you're really looking with those goggles, you'll see things on a tree suddenly that you didn't before. Oh, yeah, there's a home for X, Y, and Z on that tree. Mm-hmm. And it's being used. And the tree is perfectly happy with that. I mean, there's occasionally something like woodpeckers that come along and
yeah.
tear the hell out of a tree. But
yeah.
mostly, trees are really happy to be habitat.
Exactly.
And when a tree falls, this is another thing that I think people, is another misconception that people have. You don't want to pick up, sure, you want to pick up some of the trees because some of them are, you know, kindling
yeah,
for
yeah.
a fire. But there are a lot of trees that when they fall, they become a nursery.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a fantastic habitat for other creatures.
So many things. Exactly. Yeah, I love that, Christine. And yeah, exactly. Take your kids out and look at a tree and say, what could live here? Lots of things could live here. And and once you see it once, you're like, oh, a bat could fit in there. Then you start to see it everywhere and you're like, oh, I see the value that these have. If a bat could live here, then better for the bats.
Yeah, totally. And good for the trees.
Exactly.
Really.
Yeah. And the fertilizer.
Yeah, just think.
Yeah.
I want to talk about bat houses for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. We've alluded to them a couple of times. So what exactly is a bat house? How is it constructed? And what's the point of adding them to your yard?
So bat houses are usually either single chamber, double chambered, three chamber. You can get them pretty big these days. So people have designs for them. If you go on bcbats.ca, you can get a design to build one of your own. They are essentially, we're creating the space that a maternity colony could survive in and live in. And then we can add them to structures and trees around your property to make them a little more appetizing for bats. They can be used during exclusion. So if you're trying to get bats out of your attic, you can start encouraging them into the bat box. But you can also just add a bat box to your property if you wanted to bring more bats into the area, because it might promote a maturity colony to start up where you are. And yeah, so it can promote bat activity, essentially, is what you're trying to do. The bat boxes themselves, we usually try and make them, you make them out of wood. You want the, like, they don't have to be very thick. Like we said, bats can fit into really tiny spaces. So if you have like a single chambered one that's only like maybe a couple inches deep, you can fit hundreds and hundreds of bats in there. Those, those triple chamber ones you can get, I have a triple chamber one at my house, and it's like probably 2 feet wide, maybe 2.5 feet long. It's massive. Fortunately, there's no bats using it. But if they did, they could fit like 1,000 in there. Like, so many bats can squeeze into like the tiniest spot. Because that's how they keep warm. They want to puzzle in and squeeze together. And that's why we do chambers and not just like one huge box. Because then they can be more smushed together. And it can hold heat a little better. The one thing you do want to make sure, and this is one of the mistakes that people can make with their bat boxes, is that if the inside chamber is smooth wood, they might not be able to cling on very well.
Right.
So they might not choose to stay in there because it might just be a little too slippery. And that expends, every little slip expends energy that they need to conserve. So, like, in my bat box, I have, like, essentially mesh screening stapled on every square inch of the inside so that they can hook their little feet on that, and it just makes it really easy for them to hang on and then let go when they need to. And if you paint them, I mean, in the north, we were encouraging people to paint them a darker color to promote, like, the solar radiation warming the bat box up, but with these hot summers, it's now becoming the opposite problem. So if you are going to throw up a bat box, we suggest putting up two, one facing the south side, one facing the north side. And then it gives them an option so that they're not overheating, because that's one of the new problems we're facing this year, is that I think a lot of the bat boxes were getting too hot for bats, which is kind of spooky considering in the north it was always a battle to keep them warm enough, because our summers aren't that hot up here. And we have cold nights sometimes. But yeah, this year we've had some mass casualty with some bats. I went to one spot that had like 10 baby dead bats at the bottom. It was really sad.
It's heartbreaking.
We're assuming it's from the heat. We unfortunately got there too late and couldn't do a necropsy on any of them. But with these hot summers, it was definitely a bad year for the bats that way. So yeah, if you have two options for them, that's best, so that on cold days they can choose the hot side, and then on hot days they can choose the colder side, to make sure that they're getting the right requirements.
I love when experts are enabling whatever it is that they're studying to be themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we really need to be more aware of what they need and then enable that.
Yeah.
It's like a bad manager. You know, you hire people and then you're constantly overseeing them. Yep. You've hired me because of my skills. So just tell me what you want. Give me a deadline and back off and let me do it.
Yeah.
And it's the same with bats.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to figure it out as long as you give them the right things. Exactly.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Like, as if I was a bat, I'd be whooping. This is great. Like,
whoop, whoop,
whoop, whoop.
I want to send a shout out to one of the great people that I share board member space with at CSCK, Dave McIntosh, because I want to introduce Dave to one of my favorite Icelandic artists, Jónsi. This is from the album Go and is entitled Animal Arithmetic.
Wake up, cut my hair, making food disappear, riding bikes, making out elephants, run you down. You and I run away, blushing geeks, howling wolves, cardboard fireworks. Every time, everyone, everything's full of life. We'll be right back.
I'm so glad we're back to sitting in front of the wood stove and having our visits. Thanks for joining me today. My very first guest this fall is Carly Quinn with part one of Bats Are the Bomb. Tune in next week to hear more bat trivia and to fall in love with these little creatures whose contribution is so marvelous. The Cookie Jar is produced by Christine Bruce with music by Elijah Larson, aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Available anytime at smithersradio.com and anywhere you get your podcasts. If you've been listening in the Smithers area, there's going to be a Bats and Beats trivia event at the Smithers Brewing Company on Monday, October 30th, starting at 7. It's a bat extravaganza for Smithers. For more on bats in BC, or to register for training as a bat ambassador, like me, check out bcbats.ca. And if you want to know what's happening with us each week, find us on Facebook at The Cookie Jar on CICK. Hey!